Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 6th of November. I've had trouble realizing that today's Monday, but that's all right. It feels like a Monday. I shouldn't be too surprised. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us for our panel discussion. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A lot of things to talk about, of course. We will start off with the tragedy that happened in Texas yesterday during a church service. We will discuss that in detail, plus many other topics that we will tackle this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. Political, I'm going to turn my sound off. There we go. political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, dear.
Very nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant. She joins us this morning, and as she does each and every Monday morning, and it's a great pleasure to have you here as well.
Hopefully. Delighted to be here. Day before Election Day, everybody remember to vote, vote, vote.
That's right. Tomorrow, there's the Constitutional Convention is the big one statewide and in New York. And what's in your home state of Massachusetts? Is there a statewide? I'll find out.
Well, there are two other statewides in New York, too.
Yes.
One to strip pensions from legislators who commit felonies and are found guilty, and state legislators, and one around Adirondack, keeping forever wild land in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, that's 250
Forever Wild, I'm from Forever Wild.
Put in there. So, and everybody's for that one.
Yes.
So but most people don't have the slightest idea what it is, but it will allow some reasonable development in the Adirondacks.
Right.
And the Constitutional Convention, you know, newspapers have been endorsing it. Some have, some haven't.
Right.
But it does not look good in terms of the number of people who are polling for it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to pass.
The poll numbers seem very low on it.
The unions have done a very good job of demonizing the convention. So,
well, you know, it's an interesting point you make, Libby. I'm not so sure you're right about it, laying it at the union stores. Certainly they're putting a lot of money into the campaign and stuff.
But, right.
But I think people are saying to me, the one thing I keep hearing and I've been hearing from the beginning is, hey, wait a second. We know that state legislature is controlled by a bunch of pals, and those same bunch of pals are the people who will be electing people to the Constitutional Convention. Now, my friend Jerry Benjamin, Hank DeLay, they're all for it,
right.
and I have great respect for them. And they say, hey, you have to be optimistic. You have to try at least to do some of these things. But I think people are deeply suspicious, and I don't know that it's what they see on television in the form of an ad.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think people would have thought about it much unless it was on the airwaves. I mean, it's been all over Facebook. They've done a very nice it. And
are they paying for are they paying for the lawn signs and magnets on the cars and everything else?
There was a question because of filings of who was paying for that, but I think it's all going to come out in the wash that it was the unions that did it, and I'm not in favor of it.
Because that's where you see everything.
You're not in favor of what?
I'm not in favor of the convention.
Neither am I.
Yeah.
And why aren't you, Teresa? I'm always interested in what you have to say.
Well, I think Libby's more informed on it than me, so.
Well, I think, you know, you've got, if it passes and people run, like you said, who's going to become a delegate? Who's going to have the money to run for delegate?
And who's even going to have the notion of where you go to get the papers?
It's running for something and you have to go and do all of that sort of stuff. But, you know, people like the Mercers and some of the very rich white right wing in this state will want to codify that choice is no longer an option in New York. They will want to codify that gays can't get married in New York. They'll want to codify that collective bargaining isn't a right and that public education isn't a right in New York. And so I think there's just too much at risk in the political climate that we're in right now.
Of big money. My concern is big money taking control of it. And maybe it's apples and oranges, but I think that again, I'm fixated on the census. I think that energy should be focused in the next, ramp up to focus on how the census is handled. And I think it's the same people who would be focusing on both of those. And I'd rather that they focus on the census.
Yes.
And I worry about the takeover, big money takeover of a constitutional convention. Well, I mean, but I'm not an expert in this. That's why I'd rather hear from Libby.
Well, two things that I really want to see come out of a constitutional convention if it passes, I haven't heard the proponents talking about all that much. One of them is term limits, period. Mm-hmm. The people of New York State
there are term limits. It's called voting.
Okay, could I just finish my...
Sorry, go ahead.
Because I want to make sure that nobody accuses me of having interrupted you.
The first
thing is term limits. And the people of New York State are wildly in favor of term limits. They are also wildly in favor of it in New York City, where they have worked quite well.
And therefore,
you say, Teresa, it's a matter of voting. You're right. You can vote, but 98% of the people who run for political office, incumbents, return to the political office. And there's a reason, because we have a corrupt system in which people pay lobbyists to go and basically pay people, and then they help them get reelected. And that's the terrible situation that we find ourselves in. So I think term limits and the other, and this one I have less commitment to, but initiative and referendum. We have it in Massachusetts. It works quite well. They have it in California, not always so well, in which the rich guys put things on the ballot. So those are the two things I think we ought to be doing if we're going to have a constitutional convention. And I think if the proponents had been really playing those up, it would have helped them.
All right. I want to get to our topics on hand here and talk about the obviously the top story of the day, and that is the tragedy in Texas that happened yesterday morning around 11:20 Central Time, where a heavily armed man walked into a church in a rural town in Texas outside of San Antonio. 26 years old, and he was clad in black with a ballistic vest strapped to his chest, a military-style rifle in his hands, and he opened fire on parishioners at a small Baptist church, killing 26 people, injuring over 20 people, many children, both among the dead and the injured. And what we know about the man is that he had served in the Air Force at a base in New Mexico. He was court-martialed in 2012 on charges of assaulting his wife and his child. He was sentenced to 12 months of confinement and received a bad conduct discharge in 2014. The motive for the attack was unclear on Sunday. There are reports this morning that the in-laws of the gunman attended that church. They were not in attendance yesterday. And so that is some clue a little bit as to why he would come 40 miles away from his home to a church in the small town, but still obviously not explain the not explain the violence happening in this small quarters. He fired. He just kept on shooting. There was a citizen who a neighbor who was armed and exchanged gunfire with him across the street who hit Mr. Kelly. Kelly then fled in his vehicle, and he. Apparently, then a chase went on between the neighbors and the gunman. He went into the next county, Guadalupe County, where Kelly crashed his car. He was found dead in his vehicle. Officials said it was unclear how Mr. Kelly had died. There are multiple reports this morning from various police agencies saying that it was self-inflicted, although there is some question as to that being the case. 26 fatalities, 23 people were found dead inside the church, two were found outside, and one died later at a hospital. At a press conference in Japan, President Trump called the shooting a mental health problem at the highest level and not a guns situation, adding that the gunman was a very deranged individual. He also did bring up the fact that there was another armed citizen who helped in that situation. So that is where we are as of this morning. Obviously, many more questions to be answered, but another week goes by and we have a massive a tragedy, of course, just days after the incident and on the bike trail in, mm-hmm. in Manhattan. Who would like to begin?
Well, you know, the no one's calling this man a domestic terrorist, and that's exactly what he is. He's white, so nobody wants to talk about, you know, how he had access to his guns, that he's a domestic terrorist, that he took life without any real reason. But you have a person of color, like the person or somebody who's an other, the person from Uzbekistan who drove the truck, and they're automatically a terrorist. And, you know, the racist tendencies in this country are being played out every time you see one of these things. You know, the angry white guys are, well, they have a mental illness problem. But anybody else, they're a terrorist. And this hits sort of close to home because I know somebody who got shot in the church, and I'm not going to say who it is. I need to respect their privacy, but this is what happens.
So Libby, I just want to make sure
we're
on the same page here. I know you didn't mean this, but you don't think that the people of color who do these heinous things deserve a free pass?
No, it's not people. You know, I shouldn't have said it's the other. It's not people of color. Let me be really clear about that. The guy who did the truck in Manhattan was from Uzbekistan. He was the other.
Yeah.
Okay? He was self-radicalized, whatever it is. But he is termed as a terrorist, where these angry white men, the guy in Las Vegas, this guy, the guy who did the shooting from the Texas Tower, the guy who did the shooting Lanza in Newtown,
sure.
the one in Colorado in the theater, they're never called terrorists.
Sure, you're absolutely right.
Terrorists. They're white. The guy, Dylan Roof, oh, are you hungry, son? Let's go get you some Burger King. You know, I mean, the way people are treated around these crimes are so vastly different if they are white men versus the other, whoever the other is.
Well, and we were in this debate hours after the ramming of the truck on the mm-hmm. on the bike path in Manhattan last week, where the people were calling out the very clear differences between what happened there and what happened in Vegas. So we're seeing that again mm-hmm. as a result of this. Where we're talking about mental health. Now, someone, Teresa, I'm going to look to you for this because I know you know this stuff. But what was the recent legislation that was passed regarding the mentally ill and the acquiring of firearms?
They rolled back, the Obama administration had passed provisions that limited people's access or slowed down people's access to guns if they had mental health issues, mm-hmm. and Trump rolled back those regulations.
So then help me, both political scientists and political and communication consultants, where you say, then does it make sense for a president to then, who has championed that rollback, to then say that this is a mental health issue and not a gun issue? Well, I don't understand that.
Not to mention that this tax proposal, where they're starting to mark up the tax proposal today in Washington, comes with, as Alan's talked about extensively, deep cuts in Medicaid and Medicare funding, mm-hmm. and there's they've cut funding. They've not renewed funding for the community health centers, though they did begin debating that last week, for Child Health Plus.
That's outrageous.
And so if you think about how empty his promises are, both on opioid crisis and now to say this is a mental health issue, when the Trump team is cutting deeply into these programs. And even if they don't cut in this first round, they're passing tax cuts that are going to explode the deficits. So in 6 to 8 months, you know, they're going to come back and say we need further cuts. So, yes, I suspect that this person is mentally, you know, has mental issues, as well as the person from Uzbekistan across the board. But you know, are they going to do anything about the mental health issues? But let's, I mean, the guy walked up to a building and from the outside fired a high-powered weapon right. that went through the building and into the church and started killing people. And when he stopped shooting him from the outside, he went in and with his high-powered weapon, he shot them from the inside. And he killed 7% of the population of that town. 7% of the people in that town are now, that tiny town are now dead from a high-powered weapon. It's just, yes, there's certainly mental health issues, but why did he get the gun? Okay. Why did a person who was incarcerated for a year for domestic violence against his wife and his child, why did they buy a gun? And apparently,
well, I'm going to hold you both because it's understand to rant. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue ranting, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the roundtable, to our discussion this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. We are talking, of course, about the tragedy that happened in a rural Texas church yesterday. A gunman killed at least 26 in an attack that took place as a service, a church service, started in Texas. The motive for the attack is unclear. As we mentioned, there are some questions, and we do have letters. We'll start there, and then we'll move on in our discussion about this issue and then move on to other issues as we work through the morning.
Okay, great, Joe. But before we do, I wanted to put my oar in during the last discussion and say, yeah, this is terrible, and this panel has done a great deal to sort of lay out what actually happened. But of course, the big question is, what happens next?
Right.
What do we do? You know, at what point do the American people, who know all about Donald Trump right now, all the polls are showing, you know, the disdain which the American people hold this and the contempt that they hold him with and the phoniness and going out to Russia and saying, I got to meet with Putin, as if that doesn't have anything whatever to do with the fact that, you know, he's being investigated by a special counsel on that. Forget all of that. What we have to talk about now is, at what point do the American people say enough, mm-hmm. enough of this, and bring a pot and a pan out into the public square and say, we're not going home until something happens, because otherwise we can do a great job of talking about the guy and the vest and the thing. As far as I'm concerned, it all ended for me with Sandy Hook, mm-hmm. because when that, for want of a better word, deranged individual shot those beautiful children. Those beautiful, beautiful children. That was the debasement of American society. The governor of New York, who I don't always agree with, as you all know, did the right thing with the SAFE Act in New York, mm-hmm. and did something right. And I thought it was the right thing to do. And yet, what does he get? He gets signs in people's yards saying, you know, do away with the SAFE Act. In any case, I just think that what we have to concentrate on now is people power making something happen and not taking the BS that these guys are putting out, that it's too early to talk about this stuff.
When's going to be the right time then? If it wasn't Sandy Hook, if it wasn't Colorado, if it wasn't Las Vegas, if it wasn't yesterday, when will the right time ever come?
Sure. It was okay within a couple of hours of the New York City incident to talk about solutions then. I'd like to read Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, who's been really powerful and consistent on this issue, and I think it comes out of Sandy Hook, and I don't know if it predates that. I just am not informed enough. But he had an amazing statement out yesterday, and here's just two paragraphs of it. He says, quote, "None of this is inevitable. I know this because no other country endures this pace of mass carnage like America. It is uniquely and tragically American. As long as our nation chooses to flood the country with dangerous weapons and consciously let those weapons fall into the hands of dangerous people, these killings will not abate. As my colleagues go to sleep tonight, they need to think about whether the political support of the gun industry is worth the blood that flows endlessly onto the floors of Americans' churches, elementary schools, movie theaters, and city streets. Ask yourself, how can you claim that you respect human life while choosing fealty to weapons makers over support for measures favored by the vast majority of your constituents. Mm. Close quote. I couldn't say it better than that.
It's all about the money.
It is. It's all about how much the NRA buys off.
I really believe, though, that there are responsible gun owners out there who are the solution to this problem.
Where are
they? I really think that it's time for the responsible gun owners to step up and say the NRA does not represent me anymore, that they represent the gun manufacturers. They don't represent responsible gun owners, and enough is enough. This guy went into a place of worship. I saw this happen when I worked in Boston on urban violence, kids went into a funeral and shot up the funeral. It was horrendous. And I mean, it just, and that actually motivated the clergy and others to get out of their churches into the streets and do something about it. We've got to do something about this.
One of the things that really struck me, Alan said, you know, you read a number and it's a number. But if you look at the video, this particular church posted YouTube videos of past services
last week's service,
and if you look at it, you just get an idea of the intimacy and this is a tiny church, and if you think
a tiny town,
as Teresa said, 7% of the population, 500 people in that town. So if you look at the number of people and just think of a high powered weapon in a space that size in an intimate place with just a few seats and people who are basically all over. There's people on the altar. There's people with musicians and for hymns and so forth. So they're all around the church, but there aren't that many people. And if you just think of that, and think of somebody walking in, and obviously, you know, the damage they can do. It's really quite. It's chilling to watch, even though it was a beautiful service that they show, just to think of what happened a week later in that same space.
Putting faces. I read a statistic last night. You know, those of us remember Columbine, and we're horrified by Columbine. After yesterday, Columbine is no longer even in the top 10 mass murders in the United States. Mm. At what point do we
by
say...
By those killed.
By the number of those killed. At what point do we say enough is enough? And there are things. This was.
Teresa, what do we do?
You are more careful about who you sell guns to, and you deal with this issue of high powered weapons.
Right.
You listen to Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein. I mean, 500 plus people shot in Las Vegas, and we can't even deal with bump stocks. For God's sakes, why does the average person need a bump stock? That's not to go deer hunting. No one needs a bump stock to go deer hunting. No one needs a high-powered weapon to go deer hunting. Responsible gun owners, time to step up, folks.
So, Libby, you're the political activist. You know how to motivate people. Specifically, what is it that people should be doing right now? Is it petition? Is it saying we're going to have people standing in the town square every Saturday morning?
I think it's taking it to the streets.
Yeah.
I think we need to have Occupy gun shops. You know, I mean, I've been wondering where Occupy Wall Street is, given what Trump is in office. You know,
the NRA does not stand for me.
But we need responsible gun owners, people who understand what the Second Amendment actually means.
We need them to stand up. Step one, what do?
We need to speak out. They need to go and speak to their legislators. They need to speak local, state, national. We need to have a concerted effort saying enough is enough. We need this to stop. We need to have people who are, you know, like Governor Cuomo, all the governors standing up and saying this is no good anymore. We need the pressure on Congress and the NRA. People need
weaken
to
the power
we
of the
need
NRA.
To get people to quit the NRA
for Form
people
a different, to isn't there a side organization
yes,
at
yes,
least
there's
there
something
used
else,
to be
right but we need people to quit the NRA and to send a clear message.
Okay.
We also need to put financial boycott but the thing is, I'd love to see a boycott of the gun manufacturers, But the people who want guns, and they're going to buy it. We need an assault weapons ban in this country.
I want to hear from the responsible gun owners. What do they think they should do or they can do?
Okay, so Libby, are you telling us that everybody who's listening right now, de minimis, should get on a phone and call every elected official we have and flood them with telephone calls and call the NRA? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Now, I've been over getting my teeth fixed over in Troy, and I've been coming back over that bridge, you know, exit 8 and all, and there's a gun shop there on the way over.
Yeah.
Should people be marching around in front of gun shops?
Well, I think we have to be careful about private property and, you know, and all of that, and the gun shop does have guns. But I think that this is about letting our political leaders know we're not going to take this anymore. We stopped, to a degree, the repeal of Obamacare. We need to bring our full force of our political action, the resistance movement, everything that's going on around guns, to stop the madness.
But what I'm trying to ascertain here from both of you is specific moves now.
Call Congress, call the president, call your senators, call your governor.
Call the NRA?
Call the NRA.
Well, I would say call on NRA members, to responsible gun owners, to leave the NRA. And then also there are a number of other organizations. There's the Brady Group. There's the Moms Against Gun Violence. There are a number of people who already are organized around this issue. And you can engage with them because they're very active. This Moms Demand Action Group, they are very active at the local and the state level. And you know, I'm strongly opposed personally to guns, but I also know that some, you know, there are hunters, they're responsible hunters, and there are responsible gun shops. So you have to be careful about that, who are very careful about who they sell to. And so I think, you have to be mindful of that. But also the other thing that I noted, when I was trying to find information last night about this, I was going online to watch news clips in from San Antonio. And in between those news clips are advertisements. And many of those advertisements were for violent movies, it was just the trailers.
Well,
the trailers. And so that's the other thing.
We live in a culture of violence.
We live in a culturally violent society.
Yes. Okay. Now give me a specific about that too.
Mothers teach your children not to be violent.
Yeah.
No.
Not to value.
Figure out what games that your kids are playing online and, you know, pull them away from the violent video games. Don't support violent movies.
The holiday
season. We're going off astray.
Yeah, but holiday season is coming up. You want an example? Don't buy toy guns. Don't buy, you know, Grand Theft Auto for your kid to play on the video games.
So they get numb to the violence.
Yeah, because that's what happens.
Okay,
they get numb.
I take Teresa's point very well. There are probably some very fine gun purveyors who are more responsible, and I think that ought to be said.
We have to be respectful that there are some who are responsible. They're careful about who they sell to. They follow the rules. But the problem is, this is a public health epidemic in the United States, and you can't even get funding to do research because the NRA has got rules. You can't track things.
I do want to mention there's a story that is just out that broke that the Texas gunman Devin Kelly did try to get a license to carry a gun in Texas, but the state denied him. The Texas Governor Greg Abbott made the announcement, citing the director of Texas's Department of Public Safety. So how was it that he was able to get a gun? By all the facts that we seem to know, he was not supposed to have access to a gun, according to the governor.
My answer to that is, it ain't perfect. You can have all kinds of rules, but at least you have rules, and those rules will stop some.
Well, and he still got the gun, so we don't know whether
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean whether he had a license, and this is a license to carry the gun. Whether he had a license to carry it or not, he was still perhaps able to go in and buy it.
My answer, and I'm sure you get it, is that there are people in some of the strongest gun states like New York State who, you know, get a gun in some southern place and, you know, get
or
it
at
in
a
the
gun show. Yeah, that's the biggest issue is a gun show.
He
that's
gone
one
out
of the
state.
Issues.
He could have gone out of state to get the gun. You know, there are other states that are much more lax.
Well, you can get it on the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's not perfect, but you got to start somewhere.
Right? All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the letters. We have a lot of them. We'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Monday morning, talking about the tragic Texas church shooting that led 26 dead, including 8 members of one family in that shooting. We have a lot of letters. We'll go to those now.
Okay, Joe. Shooting, says Barbara. It's too soon to talk about gun control, in quotes, but it's not a gun issue, it's a mental health issue, unquote. It's an issue of how easily a person with, capital letters, with a mental health issue and, capital letters, a criminal record can purchase a gun. It's also an issue of cutting funding for people with mental health issues. Okay.
Excellent letter. Thank you.
Tracy says, anything that comes out of a constitutional convention must, in capital letters, be voted on. Everyone that is against the proposal forgets to mention this point. It is a key. Well, not everyone, and we have mentioned it many times, but yes, I guess we should do it every time we talk about the constitutional convention, that in the end, people have to vote on the proposals. Christian from Hillsdale says, enough already. Do you think now might be a good time to speak about gun violence? Or, once again, should we brush it under the table and wait until it happens one more time? Enough already. Lisa says, mass shootings. I'm horrified by the incident in Texas yesterday. However, I don't care to hear about any of this anymore until our elected officials enact laws to stop this from happening. After Sandy Hook, I cannot believe we let the NRA ruin our lives. I'm much more interested in hearing the facts of the president's cabinet and their serious looming indictments and how soon they'll be gone from governing. Lisa in Pokwak. All right. Mike says, esteemed panel. Thank you for that. Why is the first reaction to the Manhattan truck mass murder the preaching of tighter immigration regulations? But when another mass shooting occurs, we are not allowed to talk about tighter gun controls. And that's Mike from Saratoga Springs.
You can not only talk about it, you can call your member of Congress today and ask that for legislation.
Your point is so well taken. And the question then would become, okay, all of us are so upset by this. How many people that we're talking to today will pick up a phone and call their member of Congress?
Or email, or sit down and write them a letter. Write them a letter and put a stamp on it and mail it.
There's nothing like a letter.
Stamp on it and mail it.
Handwritten letter.
Yeah, when I worked in as an intern in Congress all those years ago, they got 5 letters and they really thought they were being murdered.
It only needs to have a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah, not
write a letter, put a stamp on it and mail it.
Aisa says, this was a convicted domestic abuser. They should never be allowed to own guns. Christina says, the shooting and domestic violence. Men who have abused their partners are more likely to commit future violence. The most dangerous time for a woman is when she leaves her abuser, with her family members also being targeted in retaliation. According to Trump, this isn't a gun issue, but it is. People who have a domestic violence history shouldn't be allowed to purchase guns, period. I'm not
arguing. I note that last night on Twitter, people were sharing that there is an exception for people who've been convicted of domestic violence that allows them to buy guns. There's a carve-out.
Right.
What's a carve-out?
An exception in the rule that says, you know, most felons can't, but if you're domestic abuse and you've done these 3 things, then you can.
Wow. Anne Marie says, white person different treatment. Hi, while I've always believed strongly in the existence of the disparity in treatment and justice between white people and people of color, I was blown away in capital letters that a man attacked Rand Paul, broke 5 ribs and damaged his lungs, and was released on bail of $7,500. What? Oh, right. He was a white doctor who lived in a gated community. Pretend he's black. Same treatment? Never.
It was his next-door neighbor. That is such a bizarre
We'll touch on this a little bit. It's a bizarre story, and it's a... it's a very good point.
I hope we know some more than we knew, because we really
what
don't know.
What we know is he's a lot injured.
A lot more injured than they originally let on, saying there's some
like
bruise.
A baseball bat.
Yeah,
he must have
he's
going to
be out
something.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Tom says to the panel, I know your heart is in the right place, Libby, but words have meaning. Terrorism implies that there was a political motive. The New York City driver pledged to ISIS. That is the difference.
I'm sorry, but this man is a domestic terrorist, just like the people, the guy who did Sandy Hook and everything else, because what it is, it terrifies communities, and that is a terrorist. The goal is to terrify people, and he did it.
I agree with you, Libby. Jillian says, guns. Guns were invented for one purpose, to kill. Cars were not, sugar was not, alcohol was not, and people did not evolve to specifically kill. People are defective animals and can go off on a dime. People do not need to be encouraged to kill by allowing them easy access to guns, and that's Joan. Okay, and Fred says, terror as terror is as terror does. Hi, so sorry, Libby. Thank you, Joe. So sorry, Libby, and all. Domestic terrorism in Texas ought to be the headline today. A killer that shoots even seemingly randomly puts the fear in everyone that this could happen anytime for whatever reason. Why has there not been any mention of the race of Kelly and the congregants? I still have not heard a single mention on this. This is a white congregation.
Yes, and it's
and
a white man.
Man that killed them.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Fred, for that.
I did note that it was in the New York Times story yesterday, but I think it was paragraph 13 before they finally got to that point. But it's a I don't know what the right thing is there, journalistically.
Roshni says, thank you, Libby. Thank you, Libby, for calling out the continued bias against the other. My thoughts are with you and your friend. Does the panel think that this will come back to the military and issues of mental health? Thank you. Love you guys.
Well, it seems like the military dealt with his issues, and he was incarcerated, what, for a year? And
incarcerated for a year and then released with a what amounts to a dishonorable discharge. But if there is to be more about actually addressing the issues of
did he get the care that he needed?
Right, and what caused it, and was it his time in service?
Michael,
we don't know.
I'm sorry, Joe. Michael says, roundtable. The shooter in Texas was dishonorably discharged from the armed services. By law, he was not permitted to have or own guns. Regardless of his mental health, this was clearly a gun issue, and that's from Mike in Saugerties. Jerome says, responsible gun owners. I was a responsible gun owner. I sold all of them after my father used one on himself.
Okay.
Oh, I'm
defund
so sorry
the NRA
for your loss.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Richard says to the panel, gun owners thought. Hi, panel. Gun owner, non-NRA. The only thing that people notice is their wallet. Notice how quickly action was taken when concerts went elsewhere to avoid state cities that were against transgenders. Maybe a tourism boycott would be noticed. Money talks, nobody walks. Thanks, Richard and Corinth.
Well, Las Vegas is certainly doing a lot of advertising to get people to go back to Las Vegas.
Okay. Judy in Northampton says, for your information, Massachusetts just passed an anti-bump stock law, the first in the nation. At least someone is paying attention. That's Judy in Northampton.
I'm sure there'll be one here in New York as soon as the session starts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Libby, that's an interesting point, because when Governor Cuomo used every single piece of power he had to get the state Senate to go along
that's
with
right.
this, and they were afraid of losing their office, and frankly, he was keeping them in office, and they went along with it. But a lot of them got into a lot of trouble over that. So I'm not so sure they're going to be all that active in or anxious to supplement the very powerful gun law, the SAFE Act, in New York.
Well, you know, if the Independent Democratic Caucus and the regular Democrats get together, they have a majority.
And for some reason, that ain't happening.
No. But I think around this issue, if the Independent Democratic Caucus is going to say that they're really Democrats,
which they are not. They're really Republicans because they're keeping the Republicans in power.
They need to band with their fellow Democrats and make this happen.
Yeah, right. Greg says, the latest atrocity. Dear panel, sooner or later, relatives and friends of the fanatical, self-serving opponents of gun control are likely to be victims of these evil acts of violence. Sadly, That's what it may take to open the minds enough to get out of the way of reasonable gun control measures. And that's Gregory in Rhinebeck.
All right. I'm going to hold you there. We need to take a break, get some news, and then we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and I thank you for being with us. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. Let us go to other issues. We talk about the President of the United States in Asia. He is on his trip and is talking, as they say, in campaign-style rallies, but also starting the meetings. He began with a media or a rally at an air base, in Japan. It's an extensive swing through Asia with American troops first in Japan as he looked toward a lengthy trip likely to be dominated by talks in confronting the nuclear threat from North Korea. No one, no dictator, no regime, and no nation should underestimate ever American resolve, Mr. Trump said, having shed his suit jacket for a leather bomber jacket as he addressed hundreds of fatigue-clad women and men. You are the greatest threat to tyrants and dictators who seek to prey on the innocent. Sounding a militaristic tone, he sought to project toughness in the face of global challenges, saying the United States Armed Forces stood ready to defend itself and its allies and fight to overpower, quote, its adversaries. Breaking with tradition for American presidents on foreign soil, Mr. Trump used his speech to promote his domestic record with a distinct political edge, asserting that the economy and military were far better off since he became president. So there is that part of the trip. Anybody want to weigh in on that? And then we'll get to the Putin angle too.
Well, there are a couple of things that ought to be mentioned. What words matter, right? I mean, we know that. And what he says in each of these places is terribly important. For example, I think you were saying in the break, Teresa, that alienating the Chinese is not such a good idea right now. And the relationship with the Japanese, obviously, you have to put one and one together. You have to understand one affects what happens in the next place that you go. But the second thing he's doing, which is almost never done on one of these trips, is he is introducing his domestic agenda.
His
political domestic agenda. Because traditionally, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, when you go away and you're a president, people stop doing politics while you're away. And that's why people do this. Presidents do this when they're in trouble, which he certainly is, although this is long scheduled, you know, to happen. So you add all of that up, bippity-boppity-boo, you get a guy who knows he's in trouble, but who can't stop himself from alienating and doing great damage to foreign policy of this country.
Right. He talked about his campaign and his domestic policy agenda to the U.S. troops, which is highly irregular. And then he brought it up again in the press conference with Abe, the leader of Japan, last night or during the night. And it's very, very unusual to do that. But he also, during that press conference, when Abe was asked about the defense of Japan, President Trump stepped in and answered the question out ahead of Abe and talked extensively about U.S. arms sales to Japan, which breaks with tradition that, Alan, you know, you can talk about, that there are all sorts of treaties after the war and arrangements that say that Japan does not arm itself. And so I just wonder, that might, you know, that didn't go over that well in Japan, but also he does this in advance of going to meet with in China and with Xi Jinping. And how are the Chinese going to respond to news that the Japanese are going to arm themselves more heavily, or that that's what the Trump wants them to do?
And one other thing, Teresa, and that is the Russian connection. Let's face it, he's going over there and he's saying, I have to talk to my friend, Putin.
Right. He's at a side meeting. He's going to the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Vietnam.
And this will be Thursday.
And he added on a meeting with Putin. And he's also then announced that he wasn't going to the East Asia Summit in Manila, but now they've added that on as well.
Now, one and one makes two. Here he is in this country. He's got Mueller breathing down his neck. And the whole idea is that his potential, I say potential collusion with the Russians over the election is what's at the bottom of this. So now the move is to say, my friend Putin, who's going to help us stop the North Koreans from doing their damage.
That's kind of interesting. Haven't they armed the North Koreans?
What did you say?
Haven't they armed the North Koreans?
Well, certainly in the past they have.
My good friend who's helping to cause this problem is going to correct this problem. I think he needs the help of the Chinese. I mean, the U.S., we go in there into these negotiations at a very weakened state. It's really discouraging. It's unfortunate. And I also wonder, I think it's tremendous that he met with the troops. He did that in Hawaii and did that in Japan. But I also wonder, did he meet with the U.S. diplomats? In Japan, did he meet with our embassy folks?
Do we have any embassy folks?
Is he meeting, you know, with our embassy folks as well as meeting with the troops? Because right now, what we need is our diplomats.
So, it's all about his voters. It's all about making the point to the people here who are very interested in seeing the troops, him addressing the troops, in a flak jacket. As opposed to doing what he should be doing, as you correctly point out, Teresa, which is talking to the diplomats and saying, "Okay, let me see if you've got some insights into what we ought to be doing here," which he's not going to do.
And remember, though, that this is a person who campaigned at his rallies about bringing our troops home and focusing on the U.S. and not being the policeman of the world. But since he's gotten elected, selling more arms to the Japan, we arms to Saudi Arabia, who bombed Yemen again this weekend. Civilians, more and more civilians killed. More and more bombing in Syria, which is killing civilians there. We had another service person killed in Afghanistan over the weekend. He's more and more troops in Afghanistan. This is a person who campaigned to say, we're going to bring people home. We're going to focus on making the U.S. great again. And instead, he's militarized all of these regions in a very significant way.
Yes, but what stuck out to me the most was his megalomaniacal, I'm the most important, I'm the only person who matters, comments of, I've got the stamina, I'll be able to do this. And I was like, how insecure is this man who is leading the most powerful country in the world?
Well, I think China is the most powerful country in the world now.
Is it really about insecurity? I mean, it certainly may be, but is it much more likely over BS, which is, you know, I say one thing one day, as Teresa just points out, I do exactly the opposite the next day, and this goes on and on and on.
And it's keeping everybody
Remember when we used to debate whether he was telling lies or not? I don't think anybody's debating that. They're lies.
Yeah.
He just is a marketer, but also he, when he goes off script, he makes mistakes. Like in Japan, saying that these car makers, why don't you go to the U.S. and start making cars in the U.S.? Well, you could have said that in the late 70s, early 80s, but maybe stuck in a time warp. But in fact,
they are
making cars in the U.S. already. And I worry about, he just announced this whole Qualcomm deal. He needs to stay on the script. And let's be clear, any president, when they go on a foreign trip, there's often a script. And to the extent possible, you want to follow that script because it's a delicate balance and you've thought it through. But he keeps going off script, and you can see when he does.
So as he's getting ready to go on the plane, he says the whole thing is a hoax, the Russia connection is a hoax. And then the Washington Post reports at least 9 people in Trump's orbit had contact with Russians during the campaign and the transition. And you look at this.
When they said no one did.
No one did. Zero, zero, zero was what we're told. Right. Well, we're continued to be told. After questions emerged about whether campaign foreign policy advisor Carter Page had ties to Russia, President Trump called him a very low level member of a committee and said that I don't think I've ever spoken to him. When it was revealed that his son met with a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower, the president told reporters that zero happened from the meeting and that the press made a very big deal over something that really a lot of people would do. Last week, with the revelation that advisor George Papadopoulos had pleaded guilty to lying to federal agents about his efforts to arrange meetings between Moscow and the Trump campaign, the president decried him as a low-level volunteer. And this goes on, but meanwhile, those numbers start to increase. The Washington Post, which I was just reading from, has a really good graphic as far as the people in Trump's orbit who were approached or had Russian interests. And also the timing, not only during the campaign, but in the early days of his presidency, which obviously we're still in.
And new questions right about Sessions. Do you think Sessions is going to get called back into the Senate? Because apparently now a second lie.
Well, you know, Teresa, there is now a question as to whether Sessions is even going to survive. In other words, Trump is aware of what you've just said, and his way out of that one is to fire Sessions. If he fires Sessions, then he has at Rosenstein, and I have been saying all along, I don't think he's in any position to do anything in his own mind. This is not Allen's advice to him, but to fire Mueller. I think he has to do that in order to survive. You're shaking your head. Most people out there are shaking their head and say he'll get impeached. Who? By those cowards who are sitting in the Senate, who are, impeachment, of course, is the formal designation. Don't write me letters. By the House, and then the Senate has to vote to convict or not. But are you telling me that these guys who know they will lose their offices, according to all the polling, if they rise up against Trump, they will not. They're cowards. They are not profiles in courage, and therefore, I know you're shaking your head, Teresa, and think that'll be the end for him. I don't think so.
Well, what I think is interesting, and Libby, you're the political operative here, but that you have key races.
You're
governors.
An operative.
No, I'm not.
You're an operative.
Sorry, that's okay. I'm a consultant.
Operator.
Consultant.
Get me on the one.
Okay, right. Point is, tomorrow's election day. Don't forget to vote, please. You have key races in Virginia and New Jersey.
Right.
For the governor. And by the way, if you're Democrat, you know anybody in Virginia, call him and urge him to vote. But it's interesting that they are following the Trump campaign model, but they are not having Trump go into their, neither of them had Trump go into their state.
Yeah.
So the Trump model, bash minorities,
right.
bash immigrants,
right.
you know,
right.
cultural divide, they're using that.
It does point, as you have said and Livia said so many times, to turnout. It's a question of what motivates somebody to turn out. Is it the fact that a man is trying to take your health care away? Is it the fact that your children are being murdered by guns? Is it the fact, I mean, at what point do people who traditionally don't vote go out, register, and vote?
Right.
That's the question, because once that happens in this country, I got to tell you, the election results will be different.
Right. The other thing about Mueller and firing Mueller is, you know, I've been reading about the cases that he's been bringing and how narrow they are. And so if Trump does a pardon, it doesn't obviate what people like Eric Schneiderman is doing with his cases against the president. And so it's really a very interesting dynamic that's going on, where you have these people, regardless of party, who believe in the country, who believe in the ideal of America, which is not what this president is, trying to save it.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit different than that, Libby. I think everybody operates according to their own political agenda and good. I mean, some people do what's right.
Schneiderman.
You get a guy like Schneiderman. He wants to be governor, and he's doing what's popular in here. But he's right. The point is, he's right. The other thing I want to say about Mueller, and then I'll shut up, is that Mueller is one smart dude.
He certainly is.
And he knows how to do this.
He does. I think that we have to remember we're a year out, from the election, in which clearly the Russians interfered with our elections. There's no doubt. There's all sorts of evidence. If you're not sure, watch the Frontline special on Russian interference called Putin's Revenge. It's a two-part series. It just aired. You can see it online. It's amazing. But what have our elected officials done so far to protect us? We only have one more year to go before the next congressional election. And the one thing that we should be demanding, and Republicans and Democrats alike must be concerned about this, what is going to be done to protect our election process? And Mueller's investigation will go on, and that's critically important. But separately from that, we need to have our elected officials focused on what we're going to do to secure our election process, mm-hmm. because the Russians have interfered with it in a major way, both Facebook ads, Twitter ads, but getting into our voting systems.
In the meantime, Wilbur Ross is, you know, is making all, it turns out, has made all kinds of deals with the Russians.
Right.
And we didn't know about a lot of that happening.
But what's amazing to me is that, you know, there was a poll of Trump voters, and they're like, oh, he should stay in office, even if it shows that there was collusion and all this sort of stuff. Why? Because they think he's going to be the great white savior.
And, you know, a majority of this country now thinks that this man, Trump, is a criminal.
Yeah.
And he lies. But this tax bill, the other thing this week is people really need to focus on the details of this tax bill in the way that they focused on the details of health care and what is to their benefit. Because although, you know, Paul Ryan, Speaker Ryan can say it over and over, the majority leader, others, that this benefits the middle class. But that's not what the expert analysis says. The Congressional Independent Analysis says it doesn't. The American Enterprise Institute says it doesn't. You know, on the left, on the right, you know, Larry Summers, read his piece today in the Times. An analysis shows that this does not, this will increase taxes for middle class people, particularly in the out years, and explode the deficit.
I need to hold you there. We're just about out of time. I want to take just a moment to remind you that on Saturday night, this coming Saturday, November 11th, try it again, November 11th, this Saturday at 7:30, Harry Belafonte will be at the Egg. Alan will be interviewing him. There are tickets still available. You can find out lots of information by going to theegg.org, but a very special night.
Yeah, and Joe, I can't wait to do this. I have to say, one of my great heroes, and I know of everybody else, who is in the WAMC group. And I can say, we really don't want to have any free seats showing at that thing. So we hope that everybody will call the Egg and get tickets, get their tickets, or call WAMC and we'll refer you the right way to get those tickets, because it's going to be a magnificent night and you won't have this chance much longer.
It is Saturday, November 11th, this Saturday night, 7:30 at the Egg in Albany. Alan interviewing Harry Belafonte, part of the New York Living Legacy series. So be a part of
great
that.
Job.
My thanks to you, Alan. Thanks to Teresa and Libby. I thank you all for being with us this morning. We'll be back and continue our conversation after this.